The meeting will come to order. There is a quorum. This is the first Ways and Means Committee meeting of the legislature, and the official time is actually the time that you see blinking over there on, I don't think it's an atomic clock, but it's a official clock, and we will be starting the meetings at 10:15 or whatever the right time is. Please go ahead and get settled and take whatever chair that you wish. We're not having any particular assigned seating for members. Let me go ahead, and there's no minutes today, so if I can start, I'm just going to make a few remarks, and we'll go through committee introductions, committee rules, and then we'll get our presentation today. First of all, let me just say that I'm very privileged to be back chairing the Ways and Means Committee, and I think that I'm privileged to have all of you on it. This is obviously a very important committee, the committee that sets the overall financial policies for the House of Representatives, and I look forward to working with all of you. There's a lot of good experience on this committee, and we'll be delving into a little bit more of that in a minute. When I ask people to introduce themselves, I'd like to ask you to introduce yourself by not talking about how many terms you've been here or what district you're from. I mean, I think people probably all know that because everyone on this committee is a senior member, but talk a little bit about what committees you've chaired in the past or maybe been the minority lead on in the past, or what other particular experience you've maybe got in the private sector or outside of the legislature that you'd highlight for other people here as expertise that you would bring to the committee. Let me say also that truly my door is always open. I don't think that any one party has a monopoly on all good ideas, and as part of that, as we go forward here in the Ways and Means Committee, as people probably know, although we do have a bill we're probably going to be acting on later this week, a lot of the real action in the committee in terms of passing bills doesn't get going till after the February forecast, which will hit in early March. And so we will have some informational hearings here over the next several weeks. And if people have topics that they would like to have as suggestions for those informational hearings, and I'm thinking of big picture issues that are affecting our state finances that will be affecting our committee and affecting the state, if you've got ideas on things that you'd like to have a hearing on, please feel free to contact me or our committee administrator Craig Stone or our committee legislative assistant Shirley Cotterick and suggest that. Let me go and do committee introductions then. And first, I think we'll go ahead and start with staff. And if I can ask the staff at the front of the table here to introduce themselves, and then Mr. Marks, maybe I can have you have you can introduce the various fiscal analysts that cover the various fiscal areas. But Mr. Stone,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig Stone. I started working in this building in 1983 when it was a light well, so that's all I've been around. So that's all I can say.
Bill Marks, Chief Fiscal Analyst, and we'll get to the fiscal staff in a couple minutes, but I believe I was here before Mr. Stone. So
I was just going to ask about that.
Good morning, members. I'm Colby Sullivan. This is my third session staffing the Ways and Means Committee and my 10th legislative session overall.
Shirley Cotterick. I started here in 1999. Retired 2 years ago. Missed you guys so much, I had to come back.
And then, Bill, can you introduce our various fiscal analysts? And have them stand. Why don't you all stand?
Maybe they could each introduce themselves.
Oh, okay, well, that's fine,
too. Tell the committees they work with.
I have members of Kent State Agri, fiscal staff, cover agriculture and higher education.
My name is Harry Hendricks. I'll be staffing the job growth and energy affordability, policy and finance. So jobs, economic development, commerce, finance.
Brad Hagemeyer, I'll be staffing the environment and natural resource finance committee, and then the three of the legacy bonds.
My name is Melissa Johnson, and I am fiscal analyst for the Education and Finance Committee. I'm Colin Roberts, and I staff the State Government Finance Committee and also the Veterans Affairs Division.
I'm Doug Berg. I cover Health and Human Services Finance.
John Wall, Public Safety and Judiciary Finance, and the part portion of the Legacy Committee.
Good morning, Kathy Schill. I'll be working with taxes and the property tax division.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Templin. I staff the tax committee and I focus on state taxes.
I'm Andrew Lee and I cover capital investment and transportation.
All right, and if we could have the partisan staff come forward and introduce yourselves too.
Bill Glahn, GOP Research.
I'm David Sullivan with House DFL Research.
Thank you. And Pages.
At the moment, I'm the page here. Also, Dominique. Dominique is also lead page for today. We're not sure if we're going to be here in the poll session. We might only be here for today, but good to be back. I was here last session. I love it so much. I had to come back again.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Simon Wenzel.
Simon. All right. Thank you, Simon. Good to have you back. Is there anyone else that staff that I neglected? House Info? Could House Information Services introduce yourself?
Mike Cooks is Senator, House Info.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. As I said before in my remarks, I think that all of us as members pretty much know each other. But I think that it might be interesting to just go around and not introduce where you're from. People probably know that or how long you've been here, but introduce yourself and just mention either some committees you've chaired in the past, if you've done that, or minority leads you've been, if you've done that, or another area of policy of a particular interest in at the legislative level, or else some other past experience that you have that is some other expertise you'd like to highlight. And from my standpoint, I'm, of course, Jim Knobloch. I chaired the Bonding Committee previously for 4 years. I chaired Ways and Means for 4 years. I've been a small business owner for about 30 years in a variety of businesses, but mostly in the real estate area. And let me go to my vice chair, Tony Albright.
Good morning. Well, my background is in finance. For the last 25 years, I've spent that assisting private corporations, public corporations in their fiduciary analysts' role for their governance, as well as their investment for the pensions, as well as their own personal net worth.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome back to you and everyone here. You asked us to say what we do in the private sector, but everybody hears it all the time that I was in the landscape business, so there's that. But the interesting thing for me is I'm, again, on Natural Resources Committee, but I'm excited to be on the Transportation Committee for the first time. My dad was a DOT worker for 41 years, so I'm excited to be on that committee. So that's an interest of mine that I get to pursue this session.
Oh, very good. Representative Kahn.
Yes, the committees that I've either chaired or been minority lead on, goes back and forth obviously, have been most recently legacy, also state government operations and state government finance. When in the old days when it was state departments and it had most of the other appropriations committees were part of it. I have slowed down these days. I've stopped running marathons because I had run 50 and I didn't know what happened if I did 51. So.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
I still have the
look
fastest.
For your name in the newspaper.
I know, and what you should do is I still have the fastest marathon time of any sitting legislator, and one of you guys ought to take that out. It's not that hard.
How fast is it?
317.
What's that?
317.
That's pretty fast. All right. Well, a challenge has been issued already.
Is that days or hours?
Now it could be days.
Representative Wagedius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was a staff attorney for the Minnesota Court of Appeals before I came here, and it was after Mr. Stone. But I had to not do that anymore because it's a separate branch of government, and you know there's a conflict there. I've chaired transportation policy, and that's when we got the first money for light rail, and which I was happy about. It's been very successful. And I've been both minority lead and chair of Environment, Natural Resources, and Agriculture Finance.
Representative Carlson.
Been, but not, I'm not now.
Representative Carlson.
Well, I did work early in my career in the private sector company called Western Oil and Fuel for a few years. They were bought out by Conoco, and about that time I decided to go into education and went back to school and spent 34 years as a teacher in the Minneapolis public schools, 1 year in southern Minnesota. So those would be my experiences outside the legislature. When you asked the committees that I chaired, I had to go back quite a way. We at one time in the legislature had what we called the Model Health Committee. And it operated much like the Pension Commission would have. We received a grant from the Johnson Foundation that lasted for 4 years. And it was technically a subcommittee of the Health and Human Services Committee, but had its own separate staff. And anything we did, we reported to the Health and Human Services Committee. But we had a health generalist and an attorney, according to the criteria of the grant that worked with that committee. So as a relatively new legislator, that was kind of an interesting experience to have a committee that staffed better than the full committee. But that was the result of the grant. I chaired one education committee or another for probably close to 20 years. I chaired the Education Division of Appropriations for, I don't know, 12 or 14 years. And then I chaired the Education Committee for a few years after the Appropriations Committee was disbanded. Then I chaired, in more recent years, the Finance Committee. And that was a position that I held when Margaret Anderson Kelleher was Speaker, and that committee existed for 4 years. I don't think it was here during your tenure, Mr. Chairman. And then most recently, I've chaired the Ways and Means Committee. Current assignments, obviously this committee, taxes, and then state government finance.
Well, we welcome your long experience, Representative Carlson, who is also, as I think people probably know, the minority lead on the committee for this term. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my background really emanates from the area of agriculture. Grew up on a family farm in west central Wisconsin. My bachelor's and master's degrees are both in agriculture. And I spent 14 years as a county-based educator with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. More recently, in the last 7 years that I've been in the legislature, I also work for a graphics design firm in Winona, Minnesota, doing search engine optimization, search engine marketing for the websites that are built there. So that's how I earn my additional income and pay additional taxes, Mr. Chair. And I look forward to the honor and challenge this session. And next of chairing the House Property Taxes and Local Government Finance Committee.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I my background is I've managed several nonprofit organizations prior to being elected in 2002, so I'm starting my seventh term. And I've served as the chair of the Transportation Finance Committee in the most recent cycle prior to this, and then I was the DFL lead for transportation finance prior to that, and then I chaired the policy committee back in 2006 to 2010. I like doing impressions of committee chairs and other authority figures. I started that back in high school when I did an impression of my history teacher, and he kind of walked in on me once when I was doing it for the class, but he had good humor about it. So, you know, we'll be observing very very carefully the activities of the committee here as we move forward. I like to exchange those with Representative Dean, who's also very, very good at this.
Well, you gentlemen will have lots of material. Representative Poppy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year I was the chair of the Ag Policy Committee, and this year I'll be Ag Finance Lead.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, nice to see you back again in this role.
Thank you.
The first time I served on this committee, you were the chair of this committee, and I guess, you know, I enjoy statewide budget items, and I think my particular skill set is saying no to people and stopping people from both sides of the aisle from coming up with ideas that maybe aren't the best. So I hope you'll do the same. And I want to say that it's nice to see Mr. Stone back in this role, and I don't know how you got Shirley back, Ms. Kotterick, I should say. But thank you, and thank you for the cookies.
Yes.
We're very blessed to have the staff that we have, and there's actually a little rule item where we'll be talking about food in the committee later, you will notice already that our very talented committee legislative assistant does provide excellent food. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I chaired the Jobs and Economic Development Committee last session. I'm a retired pipe fitter, and yep, that's about it.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back. My name is Matt Dean, and I was born on the Iron Range, a fact that was disputed by Representative Rukavina. And my mom actually sent him a copy of my birth certificate. She accused him of being a birther. And that was disproven. Then he accused me of being dropped by the nurse on my head, as the way I turned out the way I did. So that's where I started. Went to the University of Minnesota. I have a background in architecture and also in healthcare. I look forward to serving with all the other chairs here and having a good and productive year. And we are very, very happy, Mr. Chair, that you are here with your gigantic calculator and brain. We appreciate it.
I look forward, I think, to the to you working together on the committee chair impersonations. We'll have to see how that turns out. Representative Erdahl, can I put you on the spot?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first time on this committee. I chaired the Legacy Committee previously. I'm chairing the Legacy Committee this biennium. In the past, I've been a lead on, I think, transportation policy, ag policy. Can't remember what else. I've been I was a teacher at New London Spicer for 35 years, and read a few books every now and then. Another one's coming out March 1st, by the way.
Who gets the first one?
Greg Davids gets the first one.
Oh, okay.
And let's see, one of my highlights, I think, was when I, after never being on a tax committee, served on the Tax Conference Committee. Thank you, Representative Lencheski.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm the chair of the Veterans Division, and I'm also on the State Government Finance and also K-12 Education Finance. I have also served in the past the Vice Chair of Higher Education. I have a lead on the State Government Finance, and also have served on this committee before. I'm a retired teacher and coach, a wrestling coach. In fact, I'm back doing some coaching right now. Forest Lake, where I taught, just hired an ex-student of mine that now is the head coach. And I called him up to congratulate him. He said, Coach, you come back and be my assistant. So I coached him, and plus the other three assistants, I coached them in high school too, and now they're part of the coaching staff. So, and they've asked me, have I ever had to put anybody, any other legislator, in a headlock? And I said, no, but being a wrestling coach, it does come in handy sometime when you're debating bills on the House floor. But I haven't had it. Oh, in fact, Representative Dean has put me in a headlock, though. So, 25-year veteran, United States Army Reserve, Chief Warrant Officer 4. My wife and I are also blessed with a family that we have twin sons that went to West Point Military Academy. Mm. They are currently serving class of 2000. They've had multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Our one son now is back at West Point mentoring cadets, and the other son, when he got back from Afghanistan, they sent him to Georgetown University to get his master's in public affairs. He's teaching courses at Fort Meade, Maryland. His wife's a JAG officer, and she's currently in the private sector. And I grew up on a dairy farm, so that's me.
Hmm. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Sarah Anderson. And I am currently the chair of State Government Finance, and I've also chaired the redistricting committee when that came around. Something some of you guys probably don't know is when Chair Knobloch was chair of the bonding committee, I was his committee administrator. And so things have changed quite a bit since then, and hopefully we're not taking any tours because I don't think John Walls and I could survive another tour. So, but honored to be on the committee.
Representative Torkelson, who's going to be taking lots of bonding tours, I think,
perhaps
if we meet next year.
Perhaps, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back. Nice to have you in the lead. My degree is actually in instrumental music education, but my career has been in farming. So I've been on my family farm for the last 30-plus years. I served as a vice chair of the Environment Committee a few years ago, most recently served as the lead on the Property Tax Committee, and this year I will be chairing the Bonding Committee. And if you would like to join us on our tours, you too, Sarah, you're welcome. We'll find some way to get you in the bus.
I'll send Sarah as my delegated emissary. Representative Liebling.
Well, good morning, everybody. Tina Liebling. This term, I'm all Health and Human Services other than this committee. I don't know if any other legislators are doing that, all Health and Human Services. But so in the last term, I chaired the Health and Human Service Policy Committee. But I also, even though I'm not on the committees this year, I also really kind of have a foot in the criminal justice, public safety type area and really remain interested in that as well.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I'm currently the chair of higher education, which I've done on two other occasions, so this will be my third attempt at that, and I think it gets better each time, hopefully. My background, I actually started out in the oil business, pumping gas over on Lindale Avenue. the gas was 35 cents. I was making a dollar and a quarter. And I was hoping to get the $2, but I left before I got there. So, my career was in broadcasting. I also spent 12 years on the local school board and involved in a lot of things on the private sector. So I think I bring to the legislature combination of what it's like out there to earn a living, to employ people, pay taxes, raise a family, educate the family, kind of the whole gamut. We have 10 grandchildren. That's the next challenge, keeping track of them. And I also serve this year. I'm not sure how many in this committee have five committees, but I have the honor of serving on five committees. I think it has to do with seniority or punishment. I'm not sure which.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. It's great to be back. I am currently chairing the Agriculture Finance Committee. When Margaret Anderson Kelleher was speaker, she appointed me as the vice chair of Agriculture Finance underneath Chairman Al Junkie at the time. So agriculture and health and human services are where my two passions lie, I guess, along with Representative Liebling there. Just a fun little fact, Mr. Chair, I actually met Representative Kahn back in 1986. Her and I were pedaling our bicycles across the state of Iowa on Ragbri, and I come across this woman who had these big dark glasses and a loon on her head. And we started, struck up a conversation, and that's something that I've never forgotten. In fact, she shared with me the picture of that moment just a few years ago as well. So I, again, background is in the agriculture field. I've worked with a company for the past 22 years, held various roles with them, director of production, business development, etc. And I started my own small business here a couple years ago in the chicken business. So it's good to be back. Thank you.
Representative Heckbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've served as the chairman of the Environment Policy Committee for a number of years and the Energy Committee. And this year, I'll be the chair of the Mining and Outdoor Fund Committee.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a poor farm boy from Fillmore County, southeastern Minnesota. I've never run a marathon, never intend to, nor have I ridden across Iowa. In fact, I haven't even thought about that one. That's amazing. I chaired several various committees. One goal I have this year, since Fillmore County is the home of the former Hanna Mines, I'm trying to get Fillmore County in the IRRRB. That's never gone over real well. I've been serving this House probably since before Commissioner Franz was born, and I'm looking forward to serving on this committee.
I'm trying to think of some witty comeback for Representative Davids there. We'll have to. Say, do we have any Iron Rangers on the committee?
Ooh. Well, only David's an attitude.
I guess. You'll have to see if they can make you an honorary Iron Ranger. Well, by birth, Representative Dean, yes, but Representative now. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the rest of the members of the committee. I'm pleased to be back. This is my second term on the Ways and Means Committee. The last legislative session was my first time on this committee. I've been serving beginning 2009, and so going into my fourth term. I am also chairing the Education Finance Committee this year, and my other committees are Tax and Commerce, in addition to this one. My background, actually, most of my career has been spent working on legislative policy, mostly at the federal level. So, actually, my first foray into state policy was serving as an elected official here. And I previously worked in Washington, D.C. I was chief of staff for the House Small Business Committee. And those are probably, that and education are the issues I'm most passionate about, looking at tax and regulatory policies affecting small business and education. I spent 6 years, actually almost 7 years, as a stay-at-home mom when my girls were very young. They're now 21 and 17. The youngest is a senior in high school, so I spent a lot of time in the Eden Prairie Public Schools as a volunteer.
And Representative Murphy, I think you got the gist of what we're doing here, basically talking a little bit about past committees you've chaired or other outside experience you'd like to highlight for the group, or I guess anything else you want to bring up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for the lateness of my arrival because there were two trains this morning, and they're over 100 cars long, and so it takes a while. More than I was anticipating.
That's fine.
I'll do better in the future, maybe. I represent District 3B, which is south part of St. Louis County and the south part of Lake County. And so I have a significant number of people in the IRRRB district, but I am not a ranger. I am on Ways and Means. I am on Legacy. I am on K-12 Finance. And I hope to be on Pensions. I'm a career educator. I taught junior and senior high school for 36 years. I'm retired from that position now, and so I'm a historical preservationist in that I live in a house that was built by the WPA during the Great Depression, And I grew up thinking Franklin Roosevelt was a house builder, because my dad used to say, Franklin Roosevelt built this house. And we cleared the land. So we were in a partnership. And I still live in that home. And I'm very proud of it. And I'm very proud of the grounds. And I invite you, when you come on your tour, if you ever do again. Mm-hmm. And I remember those days. I remember the tour, especially in the St. Cloud, central Minnesota area, that we went on in the past. And so, welcome back, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy. We've had, I've had a lot of bonding tours in the past with actually quite a number of you, and yes, we've had some enjoyable times, although some of them can get to be kind of long. I think that's everyone here. Is there anyone I missed that came in late? Well, if not, I think everyone can see, and we are on TV, by the way, is that we have a very qualified, experienced group of individual representatives here in a wide variety of areas, and I look forward to gaining the expertise of all of you as we work on the problems that are here before our state. Let me next turn to the whole area of committee rules, if you'd pull it out of the packet. As I think everyone here knows, committees also function with rules. Underneath the standing rules of the House, the committee chair just puts them out and basically has them for the committee. But I want to go through these, and I'm certainly willing to take suggestions from people if they would like to offer them that I can consider before we officially publish these as our committee rules. I'm not going to go through every single one of the rules. All of you can read them, but I do want to highlight a few things. And number one is, and speaking to what Representative Murphy brought up, and I know from being from Greater Minnesota myself, 10:15 on Monday morning isn't necessarily an absolute ideal time to have a committee. It is not a bad time for this committee, though, since there will be times when we act on something and then maybe want to move it in session and refer it to a different committee sometime later. But I guess we will start, as I was mentioning earlier, on time. But do people here have an interest in early on in the committee trying to move our time to later in the day, to moving it after session or perhaps in the evening? I imagine the Metro members would probably prefer to not have it in the evening. Is that a fair statement? Anyone have any comments on our time?
No. This is a delightful time.
This is a delightful time.
Yeah. I think it works quite well.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, like Representative Murphy, I also have trouble getting here, you know. And just so the audience on TV knows, it isn't just that you have to drive, it's that you have to get ready to be here for the week. And so that's always a bit of a challenge. But, you know, obviously I'll do my absolute best to get here on time, whatever time the committee meets.
All right. Well, any other comments from anyone on the time? Okay. All right. Well, we'll... I know that there are sometimes things happening after session, and of course once the session starts going, there won't be a lot of time available after session unless we have it in the evening. But for now, we will have it at 10:15. If it appears that there is going to be a short session and time available afterwards, we may consider changing it here in the first few months before things really get started with a lot of the meetings in, say, March. But I just wanted to ask people on that. Number two, I think people know these rules generally, but it is the responsibility of members, I want to emphasize, if you're coming late, to notify the committee legislative assistant that you are present. We want to make sure that we have an accurate list of attendance. If you happen to come late, then there are a lot of members. Maybe if the committee legislative assistant doesn't see you, just pass a little note down to her so that we can make sure that we've got you properly checked in. And then if you do have to leave, if you can pass a note telling us where you are, if we need to have a quorum call, that would be useful too. Let me go to number four, because that's the one that probably would generate the most discussion from people, and I want to talk a little bit about why that rule is in there. First of all, the first sentence, all substantive amendments must be given to the Committee of Legislative Assistance 24 hours in advance of the hearing, is the exact same language that was here for the committee the last 2 years underneath Representative Carlson. And I think most committees have a 24-hour rule, or at least a rule asking for getting amendments in a reasonable amount of time. And there are several reasons for that. One of them is if we get it in 24 hours ahead of time, we can properly notify the public and have it as part of the agenda and as part of what the public can access when they go to the committee website of what the committee amendments are that are going to be coming up. It's also, as I think a lot of you can imagine, really difficult for staff, especially when we get to some of these omnibus bills and you've got dozens of amendments, for staff to have these amendments properly copied and prepared for everyone if they're showing up 5 minutes, a half an hour before a committee. And so for staff, we want that too. And finally, I also want to say that I think that particularly on the minority side, if a amendment just shows up immediately at the start of the session or at the start of committee or even during committee, it's more likely to get favorable consideration if we get it early and we have a chance to actually read it and consider it, as opposed to it suddenly just showing up and not having the same amount of time to think about it. Certainly, I expect there will be a lot of votes that are probably Democrat versus Republican votes much of the time, but it won't always be that way. And so I guess for all those reasons, we're going to have a 24-hour rule in the committee. If you're not able to meet the 24-hour requirement, please come and see me. Let me know. Send me an email. I want people to know, too, particularly on the Republican side, that this isn't just a rule that applies to the Democrats. And I'll give you an example. I remember when I was chairing this committee some years ago, I had a Republican chair show up at committee at the start of committee with a 40-page long amendment that he wanted to put onto his bill. And we didn't have a 24-hour rule, but we did have a rule saying that we needed a reasonable amount of time in terms of notification before amendments came up. And I told him, no, we were not going to put his 40-page amendment on his bill that day. As a matter of fact, he had a witness who, of all things, happened to be from my district. She was unhappy about having to drive down here and ruin her day and not have the amendment acted on and drive home. And I still told them, no, we're not going to act on a 40-page amendment. I mean, there's just no ability to read it, to understand what's in it. And those are the reasons that we have these sort of rules. As a little coda to that, it was interesting as my constituent stormed out of here. A couple days later, I got a call from her thanking me for not taking the amendment, because as she then had a chance to read the amendment and review the amendment, she realized there were actually several errors in the amendment, and it would have been a problem if we had actually taken this 40-page amendment and slapped it on the bill. And so we do want to, with this being the final committee that bills go through before they come to the floor, we want to give every amendment proper consideration. We want everything to be in as good shape as we possibly can when we consider things here and when we send them to the floor. Going on, this 24-hour rule doesn't apply to amendments to amendments. I know that the last 2 years we had an amendment to the amendment kind of issue on the House floor. We're not going to get quite that formal about things here. Please have your amendments drafted by the reviser's office whenever possible so that we can make sure that we have this in the right form. When you submit an amendment, please have your name on it. We will make your name public as the author of that amendment unless you tell us otherwise. Sometimes there are reasons for someone to just have an amendment, but maybe they're just putting it out there to get a little bit of a public reaction on it. Maybe they don't want their name associated with the amendment. If you tell us that, we won't put your name on the amendment until presumably, when the meeting comes, you will actually claim the amendment. But if you just want to put it out there, we need to know it's yours, but we won't publish your name if you tell us. However, if you don't tell us, your name will be attached to the amendment. Finally, I guess, as per House Rule 6.21, I've only seen this happen once or twice, that we have any sort of a germaneness question in this committee. I guess I'm going to be pretty liberal in terms of taking amendments. There's a lot of bills of all types that come before the committee with all sorts of topics, but I mean, if someone shows up with a Health and Human Services amendment to the agriculture bill, you know, I guess my philosophy is you'll have your chance with the Health and Human Service bill when it comes forward, and unless there's some real connection to the other bill, I guess we'd ask you to have your amendments be germane to the bill. But I don't really expect to be doing much, if anything, in terms of ruling on that area. But it's not a carte blanche that anything goes under any circumstances. Let me just stop and ask, since this is a item of probably the area that might have the most controversy within the rules, any questions on number four or comments, suggestions? Okay, number five, we need to get materials you've got for bills a day in advance if it's at all possible. We'd prefer it in electronic form if we can, so that it's easier to get out to the public, easier to make copies and get out to you. Turning the page, number seven, people would probably say, if you looked at my past committees, that I probably let people go on too long in terms of discussion, but the chair does have the ability to set a time for how long we will discussing bills, and on some occasions it's possible that we may limit that time just in the interest of time management. Let me also mention the last sentence there, and particularly for the audience, individuals that are wishing to testify before the committee should notify the committee administrator 24 hours in advance of the meeting. A lot of the bills that come here don't necessarily have testifiers like a lot of other committees do, but we want to be in abidance with the House rules that say that we will take testimony on a bill if someone wishes to give it. Number nine, which talks about food. Thank you again, Shirley. I spent a little bit of time trying to figure out what to put down here. I think we want to be respectful to testifiers. That means that when someone's coming here and testifying, we don't want to have people reading newspapers. We don't want to have people obviously completely involved in other things and not paying any attention to the testifier. At the same time, I am very aware that time is a very limited commodity here, and that all of us have to become good at multitasking, and that you may get texts while you're here that you need to reply to. You may want to sign some letters here and still be able to listen to the testifier. But please conduct whatever business you're trying to do here in a respectful manner to the testifier, so that and to each other, so that people know that you still are listening. Don't bring food unless you are planning on sharing it with everyone. We'll have food brought occasionally by Shirley or myself, but we don't want someone to show up here with a pizza that they're eating all for themselves. You show up with a pizza, you may be asked to divide it. Beverages are fine. I know that people have, again, difficult schedules, but we don't want to have this become a dining room where we've got some people having food, some people not having food. Occasionally, if we really get in the crunch, we'll see if we can maybe provide some food. The final item, number 10, and I think people understand this generally, but if you want something saved at the end of your committee, put it in the save folder in your folder. If it's not in the save folder, it will be recycled. We can probably get you a copy if you come back and say, gee, I didn't mean that to happen, but we got to manage all the paper around here, and that's the way we're going to manage it. Any questions on the rules? All right. Unless someone comes to me in the next few hours here, we'll publish these as the committee rules later today. With that, thank you very much, and I would like Commissioner Franz, if he is still here, he is, to come forward. And Commissioner, if you want to have Budget Director Kelly, if she's still here, come forward, that's fine too. Commissioner Franz, Budget Director Kelly, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll be spending a lot of time with you over the course of the next several months. What I had wanted to have as a committee item of business today was for one of you, or if you want to delegate the task to someone else, to start walking us through the consolidated fund statement. And the reason I brought that before the committee, I think, you know, we often focus most of our time, 90-some percent of our time in the legislature, on the general fund statement and the general fund budget. But there is a very large number of other funds and other monies, as you know better than anyone, that flow through the state. And so I felt having a brief overview of some of that today would be useful.
Mr. Chair, I would ask, you know, for Director of Financial Planning Ryan Baumtrog to come forward and walk us through that schedule.
Okay, Mr. Baumtrog, while you're coming forward, Mr. Franz, I know you've recently moved from the revenue side to the spending side. Would you like to give us, we asked everyone else to give an introduction, would you like to give a little bit of an introduction on yourself for us?
Mr. Chair, that would be very nice. First of all, as you met Budget Director Margaret Kelly, I'd also like to point out Hanson is the Director, Assistant Commissioner for Budget Management, and we have John Pollard, that many of you know, that is Director of our Legislative and Communications Affairs at the Department, and Ryan Baumtrog here is the Director of our Financial Planning. It's a great honor to be before this committee. I've gotten to know many of the members of this committee over the last 4 years as Revenue Commissioner, and I consider it an honor to represent the governor before this committee. We've had many opportunities over the last 4 years to work together. I've visited many of the districts of many of the members on this committee and visited with them directly. But I think my background is one of private practice. I was a lawyer for 27 years in private practice. I ran a small company that designed, built, and sold forensic microscopes to crime labs for a few years, and then the governor asked me to serve as revenue commissioner. I've enjoyed that immensely, and I've enjoyed that Chair Davis got up and left when I came in. I'm not sure what that's a sign of, but I had a chance to work with Chair Davis and also Chair Lincheski in the Tax Committee. I've enjoyed that opportunity with the Tax Committee, and I really look forward to working with the Ways and Means Committee, Mr. Chair.
Have you retired your stool, Commissioner Franz?
Well, I'm afraid that the three-legged stool is going to follow me forever for the rest of my life. Yes, it's sitting over at Revenue. I left it behind, and so we'll think of something else to talk about here, I'm sure, at Ways and Means. But I think one of the things that's so different for me is, in terms of going from the revenue side to the spending budget side, will be really looking forward to hearing from you all and learning from you all what issues, what concerns you have. And I am so pleased that the caliber of the people at MMB, as you know, you've been around the budget situation for a long time and prior, you know the talent and the expertise of the people at MMB, the work with the talented people, the staff here at the Ways and Means Committee, and the talented fiscal staff throughout the House. And I think the way that those folks work together, they get the work done so that we can talk about it here at the committee, is just overwhelmingly a lot of work and very talented. I can't speak highly enough of the people that work on both sides of the committee and the MMB for getting this work done.
Before we turn it over to Mr. Baumgart, I see that Representative Garofalo is with us. And Representative Garofalo, not to put you on the spot, but a little bit earlier we had all the other representatives introduce themselves, talk about what committees they'd chaired in the past or been minority lead on in the past or other background and experiences that they had. And I'm wondering if I could put you on the spot and have you do that. whatever you want to talk about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick Gravelow, I'm serving in my sixth term in the Minnesota House, and I chair the Job Growth, Energy Affordability Policy, and Finance Committee, and our first order of business will be to rename that committee to something a little bit more short than it is right now. I used to chair the Education Finance Committee. I serve on Ways and Means, Taxes, Rules, and the Greater Minnesota, Chair Gunther's Committee, the Greater Minnesota Development Committee. So I'm very happy to be here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Glad to have you here. Well, Commissioner France or Mr. Baumtrog, who wants to start?
I think, Mr. Chair, Mr. Baumtrog will start us off.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Baumtrog.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ryan Baumtrog. I'm the Financial Planning Director for Minnesota Management and Budget, and thanks for having me here today. I'm going to walk through, if it works for the committee, a quick background of the consolidated fund statement, and then I'll walk through what's in the consolidated fund statement, but also what's not in the consolidated fund statement, and then provide a quick highlights of the fund statement itself. So I believe in your packets you will find the 67 pages of financial details that is ahead of you guys for this legislative session. So the consolidated fund statement displays budgetary fund statements for planning years, the current biennium, and also historical years, fiscal years 12 and 13. And the statement summarizes budget data by the state fund for those budget periods. So in government funds, as you're all probably aware of since you all chair committees, funds are created in order to deposit revenues or deposit fees and then are used for specific purposes in those funds. Obviously, the largest and the one that you spend most of your time discussing is the general fund, but various committees spend much more time in other state funds, constitutionally dedicated funds, and other funds such as pensions. So the consolidated fund statement is produced with every forecast that we do. Minnesota Management and Budget produces two forecasts, in November and then the upcoming February forecast. So we produce the consolidated fund statement for both of those events. We also publish it for the governor's recommendation coming up at the end of January, and then as well at the end of session, after legislative session has convened, we summarize the work of all the various committees. So again, the consolidated fund statement, what I'll focus on today is actually what makes it a consolidated fund statement. So there are three high-level reports that aggregate all of the financial activities in the state. And those three reports are revenues and expenditures by fund, revenues by type, and expenditures by bill area, and then revenues by subtype and expenditures by bill area and agency. So it really takes you all the way from the top of revenues and spending by fund to then show the specific type of revenue that is coming into a fund and where those resources are going to by bill area and agency. So that's what makes this the consolidated report. Following those three reports are 37 individual fund statements, and that is where most of your committee and your committee's fiscal staff are much more familiar in the work that they do with the individual fund statements and the individual funds that impact your various committees. So the 37 funds, why 37? Well, those are the 37 most relevant funds for operating budget decision making. And they're kind of separated into four different categories. Four major categories. The general fund, which you're all familiar with. The special revenue funds. And these are this is a grouping of funds and various accounts that house specific revenue sources that are tied and must be used for specific purposes. There's also a few permanent trust funds that are constitutionally established funds, and then select debt service funds that accumulate resources and pay for the state's long-term obligations. Just as important about what's in the consolidated fund statement is what's not in the consolidated fund statement. So outside of the consolidated fund statement, MMB also produces annually the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And included in the CAFR are fund statements and information about the state's financial that are not in the consolidated fund statement. Oops, I apologize.
Mr. Chair, I just might help Ryan out here for a moment. I remember the first time that I appeared before Ways and Means, and my phone went off, and I was, of course, apologetic, and Representative Rukavina was still on the committee at the time, and he told me that that was the governor calling him to tell me what to say. So I'm sure maybe Ryan has some new information.
Well, you know, actually, the phone call triggers something in my mind I was going to mention, too, is I have been told that, and I know that we've all got phones, probably smartphones now, that we're texting and stuff with. I understand that when they are close to the microphones, they interfere with the function of the sound system and the recording, and so I guess it's just a good mention for everyone to, A, of course, we want to not have phones go off, but B, if you have them out, keep them away from your microphone. Mr. Baumtrog.
And Commissioner and Mr. Chairman, that wasn't the governor, although it was the governor of my household who was calling. We have a six-week-old baby at home, so I'm sure she was calling to either send me a picture or give me the latest update. So I don't think she was calling about the consolidated fund statement. So I'll continue. I think where I left off was talking about the other annual report that Minnesota Management and Budget puts out, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And this contains a lot of other information about the state's financial activities that are not contained in the consolidated fund statement. And those really relate to internal service funds, enterprise funds, funds that receive resources often from state agencies, or they must be self-sustaining funds. And so as to not double count their resources, we exclude them from the consolidated fund statement. Also not included are specific agency funds, pension funds, investment funds, and then also component, what are called component unit funds. Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is a component unit fund. There are several of those that are mentioned again in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, but not in the Consolidated Fund Statement. So again, if that works for the committee as a background, I could provide a couple facts about the Consolidated Fund Statement.
Well, let me just stop for a second there and ask, are there any questions for Mr. Baumtrog? Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if you could give us some examples of the enterprise funds and if they're treated differently depending upon which agency or higher ed institution may be generating them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I think the best example of an enterprise fund is MINUT. So enterprise funds are those that provide services for the public and that are expected to fully recover their costs. And so I think the best example, or one that might be most known, is the MINUT Enterprise Fund, in which they provide services on behalf of the state for technology and then receive resources to pay those costs coming from state agencies.
So, Mr. Chairman, just so and that's why I was asking if some were treated differently. So if they receive a state appropriation as part of their endeavor but generate a substantial amount of revenue separately, they would or would not be included?
Yes, correct. Enterprise funds are not included in the consolidated fund statement.
No, but I mean if there's a blending of public and private dollars.
Correct.
They would or would not?
So I think one example that would be helpful is money is provided to state agencies to pay the cost of MINUT services. So what the consolidated fund statement would show is the cost of those agencies paying for that service, but then would not show the enterprise activity of the revenue coming into the fund and the spending of that fund.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for your indulgence here. I'm new on this committee, and I want to make sure I get this. Now when I'm new, I can ask the dumb questions, so maybe other people know this. But in fact, you might have explained, but if you could just make it real clear to me. So why is a fund in the CAFR and not in the consolidated fund? What is it that, you know, why would one end up in one and one not? Just if you could say that again.
Yep, Mr. Baumtrog. Mr. Chair, Representative. I think the best way to think about it is the decisions, the operational decisions, or decision-making for state agencies that you need to make or that committees make in order to finance state government. Those are really the funds in terms of the actions that the legislature and the various committees will each independently make to fund the operations of state government. Those are the funds that are contained in the consolidated fund statement.
Mr. Baumtrack, I've got a question for you. If you'd go to page 4, where it talks about expenditures by bill area, and you've got kind of our traditional division of committees, you've got higher education, you've got environment. When I look to state government finance, all those number and veterans, all those numbers are negative. And while I've got a lot of faith in Representative Anderson's ability to be frugal with the budget, I'm wondering, why is that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you've actually caught the one thing that I noticed on the way over here as something that we need to fix. It's a reclassification that needs to be made within the consolidated roll-up. So what you're seeing there is some inter-fund activity that is mistakenly showing under that bill area. So that will be adjusted out prior to us posting the consolidated fund statement. It doesn't change the overall spending or the total uses of the numbers in. It's just a reclassification of some transfers between funds.
Oh, my hopes are dashed again. Any other questions? Otherwise, go ahead, Mr. Baumtrag.
So I would just say, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one thing about the consolidated fund statement is a way to elevate over individual decisions or individual funds to really get a complete picture of how the state is financed, how programs are financed, and how bill areas are financed. And I think one thing to think about is most of your committee time, depending on which committee you serve, you spend a vast majority of your time talking about the general fund. But when you look at all of the funds and all of the spending that occurs in the consolidated fund statement, about 51% of the consolidated fund statement is general fund spending. So you have 49% of state spending that is outside of the general fund. Once you account for federal funds, which some agencies or some committee assignments, especially Health and Human Services, has the largest, federal funds account for 28%. Of total spending by fund. Then if you include the transportation funds at about 8%, you've got a remaining 14% that is the residual of the remaining 30 funds that are spread out across each of the areas. So that kind of contrasts with how much time and how much emphasis is put on the general fund. There is a lot of spending outside of the state's general fund. It also allows you to, the consolidated fund statement allows you to look at the general fund, where we spend our general fund dollars, versus where our all funds, consolidated fund statement money is spent. And so if we look at spending by area, if you're looking at the general fund, roughly 40% of the general fund is spent on K-12 education. But when you look at an all funds, only 26% is spent on education, whereas Health and Human Services does the exact opposite. The all funds spending for Health and Human Services is about 42% of the state budget, whereas the general fund is less, about 25% or 28%. So it really allows you to see the interplay between general fund spending and all fund spending.
Other questions from members? I'll ask a couple more questions then. Let me go to page 3, if you would. And if you look at the current biennium, we see that we've got $33.6 billion in total uses for FY14 and about 36.7 for FY15. So that's about $70.5 billion. And then if you go to the 2 years before that, FY12 and 13, you see FY12 was 29.5, FY13 was about 32.2. I guess I don't know what percentage that is. I should maybe figure that out. But have we had a percentage increase that large in recent years? It seems like a pretty large percentage increase in spending over the last biennium.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the percentage change on me, although I could maybe calculate, or maybe the commissioner might be working on it over next to me. I will say, between, if you look at the bienniums, I think the funds to focus on are the ones that I mentioned before, to really look at where the changes happen. And so when there has been biennial growth, there's been a lot of interplay in the past three biennia, including fiscal years 10 and 11, 12 and 13, and 14, 15, between the general fund and the federal fund. And that's where you'll see a fair amount of the growth occur, is in those two funds. Also, when you're comparing biennium between fiscal years 12 and 13 and fiscal years 14 and 15, you often run into and see how previous budget deficits were accounted for, or how they were solved. And so one prime example, I think, for the committee that would be relevant is in fiscal years 12 and 13, I think the impact was all in fiscal year 13, when the state issued the tobacco appropriation bonds. There was a one-time savings that we received, which reduced the spending for the debt service fund in fiscal 13, but then those payments then returned out of the general fund in fiscal 14. So again, that's also where the consolidated fund statement can be used to look and see how previous budgets have impacted and impact the biennial growth.
Okay. Mr. Baumtrag, I'm wondering, I guess I'm not sure what the next part of your presentation is, but one thing I'd like to have you go through sometime before we're done here is maybe if you could just run through some of the larger special revenue funds and non-general fund items, and just for the committee, some people here, of course, are very familiar with some of them, but some are not. Maybe just talk a little bit about where the money comes from for those funds, and you know, roughly what it's spent on, what the purpose of having a special separate fund in those areas is.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, and I should mention Mr. Marks has got something in the packet on that too, but go ahead, Mr. Baumtrag.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was actually going to mention that. You have a resident expert in the consolidated fund statement with Mr. Marks, and then also fiscal staff that are very in tune with the detailed individual fund statements. So I think in your packet is Mr. Marks' operating funds in the consolidated fund statement, which walks through all of the funds, gives a brief definition, gives the authority, and then gives the receipts and spending for the previous 3 years. But I can walk through a couple of the main ones, if that would be helpful.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Sure. One of the biggest funds is actually the Special Revenue Fund. And I think one thing to mention about the Special Revenue Fund is that it is made up of hundreds, if not thousands, of separate accounts or appropriations or funds that are across state agencies and across the bill areas. And so you'll find these in your various committees as accounts that receive revenues. They could be license fees is a prime example, where they receive license revenues and then they spend on operations off of those fees. And so the Special Revenue Fund is about five lines down, and that's clearly the biggest special revenue fund, and is enterprise-wide, meaning that various agencies have several accounts or appropriations within that fund. The most recent addition to the consolidated fund statement was back in 2008 with the 3/8% sales tax increase for the four legacy funds. So those are also, I think those are under one committee jurisdiction, but those are the most recent additions to the consolidated fund statement and receive sales tax revenues, and the spending is based on which committee is dedicated to be spent on the, whichever committee it's in for the four funds.
Representative Brockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize for just going back to an issue, but Representative Loon and I were talking here, and I just want to make sure I understand how this is laid out, because you highlighted a concern I have, but I'm thinking the numbers are actually far more magnified than you pointed out. So on page 4, when we go down to actual and estimated uses, I want to make sure that I understand the interaction of the paying back of the shift and when that took back, when that took place. So my recollection on this, and this is where I get confused, Governor Pawlenty unallotted and mimicked the deferral of payments for fiscal year, it was fiscal year 10, but then the court action overturned that. So maybe Mr. Marks could just highlight to us. When I'm looking here at actual and estimated uses under expenditures by bill area and agency, education bill area, we see a $2.2 billion increase from fiscal year 12 to 13. My recollection is that's the payback of the shift and perhaps maybe some stimulus fund money in there. Could we just have Mr. Marks just kind of highlight that? Just talk about that.
Mr. Marks, would you like to talk about that, or I can have someone else respond to it too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, the yes, the looking back at some other numbers here, there was $812 million of shift repayment in fiscal 14, but the rest of it would have been in fiscal 12 and 13, and I don't have the specific numbers for that with me, but that would be the numbers for 12 and 13 would be higher because of shift repayment in those years. There is some in fiscal 14 yet, but and then zero in fiscal 15.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. So with regards to those, it might be helpful for the committee if we had data to kind of smooth out those effects, because those are not an increase nor a decline in education entitlement. And it just, as you were highlighting the concern about 14, 15 versus 12 and 13, I think if you account for those effects, you'll see that that number is actually a lot higher. And it may just maybe helpful for us to have that information. No rush, though.
Could you send that out to the members, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I can. I just make one point on it, is that it's a matter of perspective here, and it's an issue of this is accurately reflecting what the state is spending. It's not accurately reflecting what school districts are counting as receipts because of the shift. So it depends on which perspective you want to be taking on it. If the perspective is how much money did the state spend in a given year, then this is reflecting that. But because of those shifts, it's not reflecting on what school districts were tracking as the revenue they were counting as revenue.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo,
Mr. Marks, you're absolutely right. I just think it's important for members of the committee to know that in fiscal years 12 and 13, when we paid back a portion of the shift, that will give the artificial effect of making that spending look higher. Likewise, if you were to go back to 10 and 11, when the borrowing took place, that would give the artificial effect of making the general fund spending look smaller, and as long as members of the committee understand. So, thank you.
All right. Other questions? Otherwise, Mr. Baumtrog.
Mr. Chair, that's all I had in terms of remarks, but can stand for any question.
Representative Driskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baumtrog, I was looking at the at pages 1 and 2, I'm just looking at both the revenue and expenditures totals out of the general fund. First of all, an observation, of course, which I think many of us have come to know, is just the huge rate at which state government spending and revenue collection are growing between fiscal years 12 and 19. At least my calculator tells me that revenue is going to increase the general fund by 42%. And spending is going to increase by 31%. My question is looking at the difference between those two. It looks like we are projected to, and maybe this is for Mr. Marks too, I don't know, but we are projected to collect in fiscal year 19 $1.5 billion more than we are projected to spend. I guess I'd be interested in any comments you have around those numbers, what the drivers are and the difference, and how that sits in relation to our current projected surplus with the November forecast.
Well, let's see. You mentioned Mr. Marks. Would you like Mr. Marks to respond or Mr. Baumtrog? Mr. Baumtrog, why don't I ask you first? Want to make a comment on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. I think one thing you're looking at, was it fiscal year 15?
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Baumtrag, I was looking at, first of all, I commented on the trends between fiscal year 12 and 19, but I was specifically looking at fiscal year 19 and the farthest out projection that we have for each both expenditures and revenue.
Mr. Baumtrag.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drozdowski. Similar to the conversation we were just having about kind of the ebbs and flows of the general fund and revenues, fiscal year 12 obviously is still the lower receipts due to not fully recovering from the economic recession. And so you're starting to see in fiscal years 12 and 13 the growth of Minnesota's economy, but also state tax collections improving. I don't know about the percentage, but that's about the time when revenues started to increase. Had this gone back to fiscal years 10 and 11, you would really see the stepping stones as it has increased since fiscal years 10. As we're looking at fiscal year 19, one thing to consider with looking at the numbers for fiscal years 18 and 19 is that, especially for the general fund, they are hard to look at. They are planning purposes, but they're not ones that we have a budget enacted for fiscal years 16 and 17. And so if you don't have a budget for fiscal years 16 and 17, it obviously impacts your levels of revenues that you're collecting and your overall spending that you have for that current budget. So the work of this body and the Senate to enact the 16 and 17 budget will obviously impact those revenues and spending, but then also fiscal years 18 and 19 will be impacted by whatever budget solution is enacted after the February forecast.
Representative Drozdowski, did that answer your question?
I think so, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear, and maybe somebody can comment. So, I mean, it looks like at this point, to the best information we have, it looks like we're projected to collect $1.5 billion more in fiscal 19 than we would be spending. Is that with that information we have? But I think Mr. Baumgard said that information wasn't very reliable.
Well, I think it's more than that, actually, Mr. Baumgart.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Drozdowski. Sorry if I chose my words poorly. They're more of a planning purpose. You're right. So in terms of how the forecast is done, especially on the revenue side for 18 and 19, and then obviously on the spending side for 18 and 19, we're assuming current law. And so I think those are just important factors to consider when looking at the planning estimates for 18 and 19, is that they assume current law, they assume a lot of things about GDP growth at a level at which might change. And so they're obviously important benchmarks for the work that this committee does and other committees, but they are forecasted and will change with each forecast we have in February, November, and obviously will be impacted by the work that you do this session.
Yes, looking at this, yeah, we could all look forward to handing maybe $11 billion back to the taxpayers over the next two biennia, if everything was perfectly accurate here. But, of course, as Mr. Baumgart says, what is forecasted. It doesn't include inflation. It does include some items and changes in terms of forecasted growth of the number of students in public schools and so forth, but doesn't include a lot of things just because of the way we do the budgets. We, in the forecast, and this is an old debate, but in the forecast we assume current law, and so since there's no built-in inflation in any number of expenditures for the state, it's just whatever we've appropriated, that's what current law is considered to be unless we change it. And so that's why I think one reason that we're seeing the big difference there. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Mr. Marks, did you have a comment?
Not on that.
Oh, okay.
A couple other things.
All right, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, just wanted to mention a couple things. One is on the organization of the consolidated fund statement, and if you start looking through it and you see what would be a committee area, it may be different than the committee structure of the House. There are some that are going to be the same. Health and Human Services, for example, agriculture and environment are combined in here, for example. And the understanding that we work through with MMB on organizing the consolidated fund statement is it's based on the last set of last conference committee, basically. So this is based on the conference committees from the 2013 session, and that will change after this session, but it's based on the conference committee structure that's been used the last time the big finance bills have been passed. So as far as our committees go, our fiscal staff will be tracking it separately, or tracking it the way the committees are set up. The other thing I just wanted to mention, this operating funds in the consolidated fund statement material that's already been referenced, this was put together for the end of session fund statement, so the numbers are different than what's in the MMB document before you. The summaries are valid, and the information as far as where the money comes from, where the money's going, and the types of appropriations and so on are all valid, but the numbers are from the end of session fund statement, so they're a bit different than in this MMB document that we now have. And this is on the website, and it hopefully will be updated fairly soon on the website, on the House fiscal the House website under the Fiscal Analysis staff.
Mr. Baumtrag, I understand that now, or maybe Mr. Franz, the department creates the price of government out of this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, and so will you be updating the price of government based on the November forecast in the near future here?
Mr. Chair, representatives, yes, we will. Before we complete the price of government, which is looking at the cost of government, and it's looking at not just state government, but also local government and school districts, we need to finalize and have finalized the revenue side of the consolidated fund statement. So the price of government looks at the cost of delivering services at all levels of government within the state using revenues.
Okay. Mr. Baumtrag, do you have any idea on when you think that number will be available?
Mr. Chair, it's priority number one once I get back to my desk. So as soon as we can, I will keep Mr. Zone available of when it'll be available, but hopefully very soon.
Yeah, no, and I know there's a lot of work to this, and I know that you've also had some staffing issues, I think, with one of your key staff being out. I guess in terms of the February forecast, though, if I remember right, and this goes back a while, I think we're supposed to pass a price of government resolution by March 15th statutorily. Will we have this information and the price of government available shortly after the issuance of the February forecast? Mr. Baumgart?
Mr. Chair, representatives, yes, the goal of, I don't know exact time frame, but we obviously know the work of this committee and other committees goes very quickly after the February forecast, and so we'll be prioritizing the consolidated fund statement and any other of the materials that are helpful for your decisions. I would say that the November forecast, especially this November forecast, is one of the more difficult ones to put together because we did add two new fiscal years with fiscal years 18 and 19. So that also added to the complexity of this November forecast. So the February forecast typically isn't as difficult just because of the base and the groundwork that was done with the November forecast.
All right. And the governor's budget, Commissioner France, if I could call on you, I believe that is supposed to be out January 27th. Is that still the target, the end of January, Commissioner France?
Mr. Chair, yes. January 27th is the date we're scheduled to release the governor's budget.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have you back shortly after that. All right. Are there any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baumgart, I'm going to draw your attention to page 5 of the report. I spent a lot of time on the spending side, but I note about two-thirds of the way down that you have some line items with regard to statewide investment income. I'm just curious, in fiscal years 14, then moving to 15 and beyond, there seems to be a bit of an aberration in terms of the trend line there. And I'm just wondering if you could, for the committee's sake, is this based upon some type of a modeled ROI that your agency is using? What is it predicated on in terms of that you're driving those numbers? And given the fact that there's an apparent surplus or growth of revenue based upon earnings, it's resident in the budget. So for what use is it? And to whose disposal or disbursement is that available?
Mr. Baumgart.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The statewide investment income line that you're seeing there largely is attributed to the general fund, although not entirely. We do look at trend and history for statewide investment income. It is one that's difficult to forecast because if you're looking at cash balances of the general fund and forecasting out, it looks as though right now we would have a significant cash balance in the general fund. That being said, we also know that a budget will be enacted for fiscal year 16 and 17 and will impact 18 and 19. And so forecasting statewide investment income does become fairly difficult out in the planning years. The general fund, if I can, portion of the statewide investment income maybe, Mr. Chair, I will get back to you on the general fund portion.
I just have one follow-up, Mr.
All right, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baumtrog, just a little bit further down, there's a bit of a paradox that may appear in terms of investment income, which is fairly substantial, but then a few lines down, you talk about investment earnings. I'm wondering if you might want to just elaborate in terms of the difference between those two categories.
Mr. Baumtrog.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Albright, I will also get back to you on that issue to understand which revenue accounts flow specifically into investment earnings and otherwise.
Thank you.
You bet.
Other questions from members? Well, if there, Mr. Baumtrog, did you have other comments, or Commissioner Franz?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, I know we'll have lots of other questions for you in the future. If there are no other questions, I want to just note to committee members, which is on the agenda, that we're likely having a meeting on Wednesday evening to deal with a bill that I believe is going to be coming from Representative David's committee. We won't know for sure until that committee has taken action, but I want to just have you put that on your calendars that we're likely having a meeting 7 o'clock this Wednesday evening. And with that, if there are no other comments, Commissioner Franz.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I'll take this opportunity as a former revenue commissioner to speak on behalf of the federal conformity bill that you all are working on very diligently to move through as quickly as possible, because the date that we really need to have is January 20th for passage of that federal tax extender bill in order to make sure the filing season goes as well as we would like it to. So we really appreciate the hard work that Chair Davids and this, you two and this committee have done to work on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Baumtrog. With that, the meeting is adjourned.